Welcome to the Sunday Chimes Politics Weekly, where we unpack the big political stories of the week. My name is Mike Siluma. Let's welcome our guest this week, Mawanda Mashabalala, who's a Sunday Times political journalist. He's been on the podcast several times before. He usually watches the Zondo Commission for us, as well as Usibonga Gonke Wakashoba, who's the Sunday Times politics editor, also a regular visitor. On the podcast. Leading our top stories this week will be the ANC step-aside saga, the implications of the top six NWC as well as NEC decisions in relation to what has been happening, particularly around the Secretary General Ace Magashule. We will also be touching on the Zulu Royal succession dispute following the passing and interment of the Regent Queen Mantfombi Dlamini Zulu. Lastly, we will be going as well to the Zondo Commission, where Mawanda will give us an update as to who were the interesting characters who featured this week. Also, we'll be talking about the point that was raised in evidence by Lucky Montana, the former CEO of PRASA, talking about funding for the ANC.
This econ is racist.
I've never, ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shit.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
Welcome once more to the show, gentlemen.
Thank you, Bramax, for inviting us.
Let us start with you, Mawande, and look at what transpired at the commission this week. I thought it was very interesting that Lucky Montana was going out on a limb, as it were, you know, to say that, well, basically shedding light, if you believe, you know, his version, shedding light of how one of the many ways that the ANC raises funds. What was the context of that?
Well, first of all, Lucky Montana didn't shed any light on anything that is not known, other than being a very first, brave and honest person who is an ANC person in his own right as a comrade who was deployed at PRASA as the CEO, who was able to come out honestly and speak about the shenanigans. The context was, the matter of how, which has been evidence that has been led before, but it was led by people who don't have personal information of how the ANC sometimes, can't distinguish between the state and the party, and how in their shenanigans in that regard, they tend to abuse state resources for the benefit of the party, state resources being government departments, state-owned companies such as PRASA, where, like Montana, was a CEO for close to a decade. So Lucky Montana was speaking about his personal knowledge as to how ANC, and he said it without mincing his word, that the issue of ANC blurring the lines between party and state is nothing new. Actually, if I were to quote him directly, he said it is a way of life within the ANC. And he put it categorically that it was not an issue of a certain faction of certain individual. It was just the way of life and how ANC has found it as an easy way to survive financially when it can't win with private donors. It just goes straight and takes advantage of its control of government, goes to CEOs of SOEs. He put examples of personal experiences that he had of ANC being summoned at Luthuli House. He actually said that if Luthuli House doesn't destroy the registry of visitors, if you go there, you will find almost every month there's CEOs of all SOEs, because he said he even spoke to his colleagues at the time he was CEO of PRASA, who were telling him the same experiences. They were consulting each other as to how do we handle these guys. These ANC guys keep on coming to us and asking us to fund ANC events. He was even saying during the time he was CEO of PRASA, there was a one occasion where the ANC actually was going to have a General 8th, and they asked him, they called him into an ANC meeting as a state functionary and said he must give them a transportation plan to this particular January 8th event. You see, now they are calling a state functionary who's supposed to be serving the public to serve the interests of the party and transport ANC members and supporters to an ANC event, which was going to be cost free because Prasa was going to provide the trains. Prasa was going to provide them with the strategic plan itself as to how it's going to be coordinated. So I thought it was quite revealing, dramatic, and it was an interesting revelation in that it was said by someone who had personal information. It would be very difficult to dispute someone like that, who said, actually, if you go to the register of Luthuli House, you'll find my names and all the other names of executives of state-owned entities who visit Luthuli House regularly because it's a way of life within the ANC.
I'd like for you to come in here. This whole issue of fundraising for political, for the ANC, does it not also speak to the broader issue of how we fund politics in this country, how we fund political parties in a democracy such as we have? Is this unique to is the money issue unique to the ANC, or is it a generalized problem in our body politic?
It is a generalized problem in our body politic, Ramaik. That's why it was important that President Ramaphosa sign into effect the Political Party Funding Act, which actually prohibits government departments from contributing any resources to political parties. So with that act in place, Lucky Montano was talking about can be prevented. That act is now in effect, Bramike. It was put into effect on the 1st of April. So it means what Lucky Montano went through with this act in place, other CEOs of state entities are not supposed to go through the same through the same experience. But Bramike, as you said, it's a widespread problem. Of political funding. It's not just the ANC, but it's all political parties. We have that problem of political parties having received monies from really questionable sources. If you remember, Bramike, I'll take you back to the time when the revelations about the Guptas was made, how the Guptas had donated to the ANC. And there was evidence that they actually had also donated to the DA. And that's why that act is very important, Bramike, because it gives us an opportunity to know exactly who donated to what political, to which political party. And that is important so that we know, Bramike, if people are investing in political parties and that they want something in return.
By way of what? Of legislation, maybe tenders, etc.
Yes, influence. They just take over the influence of political parties. It starts with the policy formulation in that political party. People influence the policy direction of a particular political party so that in the end they benefit. And that has been the problem since our democracy, and it's a good thing that this act is now in place, and political parties will be able to now have to disclose who's funding them if they donate more than 100,000 rands per annum. And it also, by my deals with the issue of foreign interests in our country.
In what way? In what way, Shab? How does it address the foreign interest question?
So this act, Bramike, also limits the donations from outside the country. So we had a problem that political parties were receiving funds from other governments who were then influencing our direction as a country. And now this new act stipulates that you can't receive such donations. You can only receive donations that have to do with research, training, and also with that donation, it's also very much limited, which is a good step in the right direction, that you can't have foreign interest influencing the country and the direction that we take and the decision that are taken. Because if someone funds your operations and funds your elections, and funds your day-to-day operations, that person or that institution or that country, it means that it runs you, it runs your thinking.
So it affects your sovereignty in a sense.
It's taken away, yes. And that act, Pramaik, which is in, now in effect, has dealt with all these problems, including the problems that Lucky Montana was dealing with in the commission. And Malawande is right. Lucky Montana is not revealing something we didn't know. But the significance of his testimony is that it's now being confirmed by someone who was there, who experienced it, and is confirming it under oath before a commission.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Hey, Mawande, just very quickly, who else was at the commission this week that we need to know about?
The commission, actually, let me just give you a broad view. The commission is quite disappointing to me, at least as a person who follows it consistent in how recently it has set up its witnesses. I feel like towards its ending days, it's a bit all over the show. Commission used to be very much more organized. There would be a particular stream when you know that it's PRASA that week, it would be PRASA all the way. When it's ESCOM, when it's transferred. But these days, it's all over the place. For instance, just this week, from PRASA, Lucky Montana, we went to Kevin Wadeford from Bosasa. We went to a DG of the Free State Provincial Government, issues of bursaries in the Free State. So it's a bit all over the place. It's actually very difficult to tell that in its ending days, what is it that they are trying to achieve? But then this week, to answer your direct question, from Lucky Montana, we went to Bosasa issues, and then yesterday we went to the issue of at the same day we went to the issue of the Free State, the whole controversial bursary scheme of the provincial government that was run by the government of Ismail Khashoggi and all the shenanigans of him requesting business people to channel funds towards funding Free State students that were absorbed by the provincial government, that it sent to countries like Cuba, China, and Turkey. And then when the government was struggling to bring in business people from who are service providers of the provincial government to say, comrades, come in and assist here when students need laptops, they need accommodation paid. But what was quite interesting for me in that particular testimony of the DG of the Free State Provincial Government, who was during ACE's time and still is to this day, is that he distances himself completely from the bursary scheme, especially as it relates to Ismail Khashoggi requesting external business people who are service providers of the provincial government to come in and assist. I felt that was quite significant in that the DG of the provincial government is housed at the office of the premier, and for him to say that I knew nothing about this, it tells us that this is outside the official channels, was doing his own shenanigans. So you know, and things that are done outside the official books, they only raise too many questions as to what was his intentions. Was this did it end with these business people only channeling their funds towards the needs of the students or any other thing?
Mawande has just been talking about Ismail Khashoggi. He has been going through a rough time at Luthuli House.
Yes, Pramaik. Ismail Khashoggi is going through a very difficult time at Luthuli House, as you were saying. He's been temporarily suspended by the National Working Committee of the ANC, which met on Monday. We know the background about the 30-day notice and people having to step aside. And ACE had requested that time to talk to former leaders of the ANC and seek their guidance about what steps to take. And when the 30 days were up last week, Ismail Khashoggi did not step aside. In fact, only one prominent leader of the ANC stepped aside last week, and that is the deputy chairman of the ANC in KZN, Mike Mabuya, who is also facing his own corruption charges. But then, Bramaiko, on Monday, the NWC said, no, you haven't stepped aside, then we suspend you temporarily. And Ismail Khashoggi did try, Pramaik, to stage some kind of a fight back, which appeared to really be clutching at straws, really, because he's tried to stage a fight back by writing to President Ramaphosa, suspending him for the CR17 campaign funds. But really, that has never happened in history that a Secretary General will just write to the president and suspend him. So the fight is ongoing, Bramaik. So this weekend we have what is like the what is billed as the most important NEC meeting since Zuma was removed. We must remember, Bramaik, that this is the same NEC that removed Zuma, and ACE and these supporters are hoping that this NEC will reverse his suspension. But when you look at the balance of forces, that is very much unlikely. And his decision, Bramaik, to actually write to President Ramaphosa and state that and also issue a statement saying that he has actually appealed and he has, which means that his suspension is lifted, has actually hardened attitudes within the National Executive Committee of the NEC. There are now people in the NEC who are saying, actually, let's take harsher action against this Marshall Khashoggi. So by the end of the weekend, Bramaik, we might be in a situation where the Secretary General of the ANC may be actually facing charges in addition to a temporary suspension that was meted out to him by the National Working Committee.
But let me ask this to you, Shoba, and then to you, Mawande. Has something like this ever happened in the history of the ANC where A, the Secretary General gets suspended, and B, they try to come back and suspend the president? Shoba, can you recall anything like this ever having happened in the history of the ANC?
Bramaka, I've studied the history of the ANC. There has been fights within the ANC. Fights are normal within the ANC, and fights have led to splits and. And there's been prominent leaders of the ANC who've been expelled from the ANC. But it seems as if it's the first time that a national official of the ANC who is a secretary general, because primarily the position of secretary general is a very influential position, because that person is in charge of the day-to-day running of the ANC. He's like the CEO of the ANC. And I'm looking back at the history of the ANC. I may be wrong, I do not remember a time when the engine of the ANC is under siege, where the engine of the ANC is accused of actually undermining the ANC and its structures, and it's actually facing a possible charges and maybe even a possible expulsion.
Mawande, this is on the surface it might look like a fight between the president and the secretary general, but what in your from where you're sitting does it tell us about the state of the ANC as an organization?
Well, Bramaik, the state of the ANC, to be blunt, is a state of paralysis, as it were, as was saying that it's never happened before. We were used to internal ructions within the ANC, but it's never happened before that at the belly of the party, at the day-to-day operations, what some call the CEO of an organization, which is the Secretary General, is in facing the problems that the current SG of the ANC is facing. That tells you the state of decay, morally, ethically, politically, and otherwise within the ANC. That these, in fact, if I were to be a doomsayer, that these are the last kicks of a dying horse, as it were, as far as the ANC is concerned. Because there's this wrestling for the soul of the ANC, and it's not for the soul of the ANC for astute or moral or ethical reason. It's really all about the control of state resources. Part of the reason that Ace Magashule and those that support him, we will really take this to the end. I feel they are not going to give up early, even if the writing is on the wall that it's game over for them. But they are not, because the status and the power that comes with being an ANC leader is for personal beneficiation. It's far too bigger for one to just give up, because it gives you, you are able to instruct councillors, you are able to instruct mayors, able to instruct even premiers and MECs and all sorts of people in SOEs because of the status that comes with you being an ANC leader. So I feel that is where we're at now, that these days the contest is about the contest for control of state resources for personal beneficiation and the benefit of their allies and their business handlers, quite frankly.
If you know, a lot of people looking at what has happened with the NWC and what's happened in previous NECs, and what happened with that with the top six and the ultimate suspension of Ace Magashule, a lot of people have said, oh yeah, this is proof that Cyril Ramaphosa now has got total control of the ANC. Now, if this were a boxing match, right, would you say Ace Magashule has been knocked out, or he is down but not out?
Bramaik, a lot of people were very much frustrated with the strategy adopted by President Cyril Ramaphosa. If it was a boxing match, President Ramaphosa has proven that he's not a fighter, he's a boxer. And then he does not rush into knocking the opponent out on the first or the second round. He is the guy who takes his time, who wants to box until the opponent is tired, until the opponent is confused, and then ultimately knocks him out. And then this is what has happened, Bramaik. Because if you remember, the decision on step aside, that leaders should step aside, where the ANC spoke about drawing the line, it was taken last year as early as August. And it has taken a very long time for the party to actually implement this decision, to actually write letters to people, as it happened this week. And it has been a very frustrating process. But now, if you talk to people within the ANC, NEC, they will tell you that President Ramaphosa is very much in control right now. And going into this NEC, Ace Magashule has lost a lot of allies. And if you look, for an example, Pule Mabe, who's the spokesperson of the ANC, a guy who was seen outside the court speaking on behalf of the ANC, but people saying, "Not actually, you are now speaking on behalf of Ace Magashule." You have people like Nomvula Makonyane, who's been perceived as an Ace supporter, and now having changed tune. And we saw Pule Mabe this week issuing a statement dismissing Ace Magashule's letter to the president and his statement. It tells you that Ace Magashule is now being isolated. Of course, it still does have supporters within the NEC. Tony Engeni was in each and every media you can imagine in this country talking in defense of Ace Magashule. We expect him to do the same at the NEC, but they are getting fewer and fewer. And this tells you that the president is very much in control of his party, which is something that was totally the opposite last year. And people were wondering whether he is fit enough to lead the ANC.
Hey, Mawande, is Ace Magashule, has he been knocked out or has he been knocked down?
Yeah, he's toast, Bramaik. He's toast.
He's worse than being knocked down. He's toast.
Yeah. You know, I can agree more with Mr. Shoba on his take on this matter, in that, you know, I like his boxing analogy, because that's actually what I like to use. Boxing analogies, I would say President Ramaphosa in this battle for control of the ANC, he has been fighting like Floyd Mayweather. You'll know that Floyd Mayweather will retire undefeated after 50 fights. Many people used to say, actually, his fights are boring, but they were so because he was not after entertaining or, you know, having a brawl where people will always be at the tip of their chairs, but he was about winning. And for him to win, he was fighting strategically. You take your time, you study your opponent, you suss him, you box him in, you box him out, you see his strengths and weaknesses. And as soon as they drop their guard, you go for the kill. And that is exactly what the President Cyril Ramaphosa has done in this regard. As Mr. Shoba is saying, his support base, even the people that were his staunch supporters, are beginning to, you know, speak with twisted tongues. I saw recently on social media, even the likes of Egur Ruleni Mayor and ANC regional chairperson in that region, Mzwandile Masina, actually distancing himself from a support of Ace Magashule. And these are people who used to be the most vocal supporters of Ace Magashule. But it shows you that now people, you know, a politician, the life of a politician is self-preservation. And self-preservation is informed by political developments and how they study them. Now people are beginning to see that this guy is in a corner alone, and there's nothing he can offer me. Remember, because also the most important dynamic is what you control and what you can offer me. President Ramaphosa is in charge of the state. The state has abundance of position in terms of dispensing the patronage, as it were, which is part of political survival. Esma Kashule on the other side is nowhere to be found in the state. So even if people support him, what does he have to promise them? President Ramaphosa can pull a trigger and do a cabinet reshuffle and fire ministers and appoint new ministers. He can appoint ambassadors. He can appoint people in state institutions as teachers and all of that. Esma Kashule doesn't have of that. So hence I say, Esma Kashule, whether he likes it or not, he is toast. There is nothing he can do. He can try. These are the kicks. Last kicks of a dying horse, because really his support base will drop and drop. Actually, I'm of the view that this weekend's NEC meeting may mark the beginning of an end, or the real end of, as it were, for Esma Kashule. And I doubt very much that other than people like Tony Yeng and Dakota Lekwete, who are not part of the state, so they have not much to lose by supporting Esma Kashule. But those that are ministers, those that are ambassadors who are within the NEC, I doubt much that even if they are supporting it before, they will do it this time around, Pramay.
Folks, that's all we have time for on the Sunday Times Politics Weekly this week. And as usual, I'd like to thank my guests, political editor of the Sunday Times, Sibongakonke Shoba, as well as political journalist, Umawanda Mashabalala. I'd like to thank them for once more joining us on the podcast. And by the way, you can catch our podcasts on iono.fm, on Spotify, on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to obtain your podcasts. Until next time, folks, stay safe, sanitize, wear the mask, and avoid crowded places. I'm Mike Siluma. Until next week, see you then.